Hey listeners, how's it going? So coming back with a discussion-based podcast today, what we're going to be talking about is how to determine if we have a motor control issue and maybe some quick ways to retrain motor control. Just to update you on things. Again, we got more podcasts coming up, inviting other speakers, talking about some more S&C principles, some more rehab principles, some more wellness recovery principles. So stay tuned for that. And as always, appreciate all the feedback on different platforms, but speak up, let us know if there's a topic you want to talk about or anything you're interested in. I think the one we're going to be talking about today is interesting, about motor control issues. So what is a motor control issue? You know, a good way to think about that is the misalignment of the input into the output. The software is not talking to the hardware. So what I mean by that is there might be a perceived mobility or stability issue, but it's not actually driven from caps or a change inherently limiting range of motion. It's not limited by a true atrophied muscle that doesn't know how to produce force. It's more limited by the interpretation of the task at hand and creating the output that you're looking for. So, you know, what would be a basic way to say that, right? So maybe someone is limited in a rotatory pattern and you clear out different rotatory movements and you can't figure out why one is limited in one direction and limited in the other and stand in another direction and so forth. And often it can be more of an output issue or interpretation issue. So let me talk through that in more detail. So a common one is probably rotation, because rotation often is the most demanding task on the system. It loads all three planes of motion at once, but it's also the most usually sport-specific task. So let's say we have a golfer. The golfer is in for you for maybe some, the right-handed golfer, in for some right shoulder pain and some left low back pain. You watch their golf swing, you notice some things, but one of the biggest things you look at is maybe how they rotate. So you have them do a standing trunk rotation. Maybe they go, 50 degrees to the right in standing. They go 60, 70 degrees to right or to the left in standing. Then you sit down, you take the hips out of it, and then it inverts, where maybe now it's 50 degrees to the left, 70 or 80 degrees to the right in sitting, which biomechanically doesn't necessarily make sense. Typically, the only thing that changes is, you know, the interaction of the hips. When you're sitting, you're not going to be using your hips as much as you do when you're standing. Maybe look at it a third way, and now you go into like a lumbar lock quadruped rotation. And again, maybe you notice that the right rotation is better than the left. Point being here is the rotation is limited in different patterns at different positions. If you have a biomechanism point of view, you would start to get confused, right? So maybe in lumbar extension, they have rotation better, but sitting's also extension. Why would it change there? And you're just trying to wrap your head around it. You know, is it the hips? Is it something else? And often it can be a motor control issue, right? So you can start going down the rabbit hole of trying to tease out some mobility issue that's driving it. But again, I encourage you to think about that input-output ratio. I think someone smarter than me once said it's almost like a light switch, right? So you're asking the task to be achieved and the person can't figure it out, right? The switch is off. So what we've got to do is turn the switch back on and create that connection. And there's a couple of movement patterns that are usually really good at that. But these are the kind of issues that we want to be picking up. These are the super fun ones. These are the ones where you can get immediate changes in motion, immediate changes in function, because you don't have to address an inherent stiff capsule. You don't have to spend your 4 to 8 weeks of loading the movement pattern to get hypertrophy. It's truly like a neuromuscular control issue. So in this situation where rotation's changing in different positions, and you start to get a little confused where it doesn't match up with a mechanical pattern, what could be some ways that you might tease it out? So one would be watching them roll. And this is something that we do all the time with our PNF techniques. But rolling is huge, right? Rolling is the interconnection of your lower quadrant to your upper quadrant, and the connector is your core. So if you can't roll, you're losing that connection and there's that output issue. So And the developmental motor sequencing, rolling is one of the first primary patterns that we all want to work on. So if you had somebody, you might put them on the ground, you have them in supine, arms extended, legs extended, and you say, roll from your back to your left. Maybe when they roll, you know, their legs are sluggish, the upper half's moving, the head's moving, but there's not that connection. You put them on their back, they roll to their right, and it's smooth, coordinated. So you know there's, in that scenario, we'd call that a mass flexion pattern of rolling to the left is inhibited. And you'd be surprised, you get them up, or sorry, you have them roll 5 to 10 times, teach them the movement pattern, teach them to try to move from the scapula at the pelvis at the same time, do 5 to 10 rolls, maybe even up to 20, get them back into those movement patterns of restriction. You'll notice that the standing rotation and the sitting rotation gets better, right? So you didn't actually change any capsular mobility, you didn't improve strength, you improved the output, you improved that motor control. So there's a lot of different ways to do this as well. So rolling would be one, right? So that should be a go-to that we all use to maybe help tease out motor control issues. True PNF techniques of like pelvic and scapular PNF are huge because they're kind of manual-based PNF patterns where you can facilitate the mass pattern of flexion, the mass pattern of extension to get the motor control back in check. So in that scenario I was saying before, you could use manual resistance on the lower quarter to help facilitate the flexion-based movement pattern. So PNF's huge. You can do PNF in different positions of half kneel, tall kneel, quadruped, supine, side lying. And it's a great way just to basically connect the extremity to the trunk. We talked about rolling. Another huge one is crawling, right? So if you lack motor control and you lack that connection of upper to lower or trunk to upper or trunk to lower, crawling is a great way to do it. So in the motor sequencing, after we learn how to roll, after we learn how to prop on elbows and we learn how to kneel in different positions, we eventually learn how to crawl. So you can do resistive crawling with your hands, with bands. Maybe you're doing crawling at different angles, trying to do three-dimension crawling. These would all be things that you would go to, not just because you have someone in like acute low back pain, but you have somebody again with that output issue. So again, you're doing tests and the rotation's different. You're doing tests and the squat looks clean, but the second you put them in a single leg position, it goes awry. There's a lot of different examples of this. Maybe that's a cervical rotation and an upper extremity rotation where the demands of the sport don't match up with what you're seeing, and it changes from standing to supine to sitting, which again, mechanically, that shouldn't make a huge difference. And so you know there's motor control issues there. So I think a good thing to kind of take away from some of this conversation is we should have several ways to test the same principles. So we'll go back to rotation, several ways to test rotation: standing, sitting, supine, side lying. We should also have different ways of retraining the motor control, and the ways there would be rolling, crawling, breathing, and different kneeling positions would be go-tos there. And I think the art of a great coach, a great PT, is integrating that motor control, integrating that neuromuscular control, but within your functional training, right? So I often see in the gym is people are doing great movement patterns, but they're not doing them with the movements or the muscles that they're looking for. You know, probably a back squat would be the prime example. There's a time and place for the back squat, but more often than not, they're gonna be doing an extension-based bias. They're gonna be doing a back squat, trying to strengthen their legs, and really they're just loading their paraspinals and their spine, and they're not actually gonna get the long-term strength outcomes that they're looking for. So, you know, a great coach might see that. They might see in the examination these different teases of motor control issues that we've talked about. Maybe their active rest between sets is rolling or crawling. Maybe when they're actually doing the set of the back squat, they're giving them visual cues, verbal cues, even tactile cues of some postural things to look at of trying to connect the trunk to the extremity. But I think if you can start to pick up this stuff and start to grasp it, they're awesome things to get those immediate changes in buy-in. And more often than not, the clients that we're working with, especially if you're more with the active population, are doing plenty of strength, doing plenty of mobility, and they've been doing it for a while and haven't had changes. And you're the one that's gonna help fill that gap. So if you're looking for more resources on this, I mean, the probably the most gold standard would be like the SFMA or FMS, where they're looking at all these different movement patterns. DNS also adds awesome, great integration of all these developmental movement patterns and how they influence movement. Like I listed before, PNF is great with the folks out of Kaiser Vallejo, or IPA does a lot of PNF stuff as well. But I think if you aren't understanding the neuromuscular control, aren't understanding how the body is threatened in different positions and interprets movement differently based on how you're situated, you're going to be missing a huge part of it. So learn up some of that stuff. Use some of the developmental movement patterns of rolling probably being the prime example, and start to think big picture. Start to think about putting pieces of the puzzle together with your assessments versus just being rigid, like shoulder external rotation, shoulder flexion. How is external rotation and flexion being integrated, and how does it change based on the position and the load that you put them under? These are the kind of train of thoughts that we want to be thinking about. So hopefully that's beneficial. Hopefully there was a little nugget or two to take away, and reach out with any questions, but stay tuned for more info and have a good one.